June 25th, 2019, public hearing on Local Law 1 of 2019 at 6 o'clock, public hearing on Local Law Number 2 of 2019 at 6:15, month-end meeting at 6:30, and a regular town board meeting at 7 o'clock.
All right, we're going to get started here. I know, I think everybody's has signed in this evening. First of all, I'd like to welcome everyone to a public hearing on Local Law Number 1 for the year 2019. This is a moratorium on the permitting of large-scale ground-mounted solar energy systems. The reason the board took action to propose a moratorium is that the town's been approached and been made aware of several proposals to install commercial-scale solar arrays on farmland in the town of Moreau, and currently under our zoning, they're not permitted in the ag district. So we are here to take public comment so that the board has a better feel of what the community is looking for, particularly those that live in the ag district. And so this evening we will be taking that comment officially for the record. And I believe that we have the official notice has been placed in the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Could you read that notice for the public?
Town of Moreau notice of public hearing to consider adoption of local law. Notice is hereby given pursuant to Section 20 of the Municipal Home Rule Law of the State of New York that a public hearing will be held by the Town Board of the Town of Moreau on June 25th, 2019 at 6 p.m. at the Town Municipal Complex located at 351 Reynolds Road, Moreau, New York, for the purpose of considering the adoption of Local Law Number 1 of 2019. If adopted, Local Law Number 1 of 2019 would create Chapter 75 of the Moreau Town Code, temporary moratorium on permits for an installation of ground-mounted solar energy systems and large-scale solar energy systems within the town of Moreau. The moratorium prohibits the permitting of new ground-mounted solar energy systems and large-scale solar energy systems, including the consideration of applications as of the date of the adoption of this notice. Written comments on Local Law Number 1 of 2019 can be submitted to the town clerk up and through the time of the public hearing. A copy of proposed Local Law Number 1 of 2019 can be obtained at the Moreau Town Municipal Complex and on the town's website, published June 15th.
Thank you, Leanne. And before I officially open the public hearing, just a couple ground rules. For a town board resolution at an organizational meeting, each individual will have 5 minutes to address the board, and please keep your comments germane to the actual proposed local law. Prior to speaking, please state your name for the record, your address, and if you're representing someone, please state that you are representing either an individual or an entity. All individuals will be given an opportunity to speak. Once everybody has had their first 5 minutes, we'll go back around until everybody has had their comments made on the record. It's the board's intention this evening. We only allow 15 minutes for the initial public hearing. We also allow 15 minutes for a second public hearing on a separate proposed moratorium for multifamily dwellings. So the board will keep the record open. If we find that there's a lot more that individuals want to say, we have the prerogative to hold either a separate meeting to continue the public hearing. Either way, the public hearing will be kept open, and we will receive comments right up through the next several weeks before we close the public hearing. So with that, I just wanted to read some correspondence which we have from Saratoga County Planning Board. Tom Lewis is the chairman, Jason Kemper is the director, and it's in reference to the moratorium on Local Law 1 of 2019 in the town of Moreau, which is the 6-month temporary moratorium on the planning of large-scale ground-mounted solar energy systems. They approved the moratorium with comment, And I would like to read the comment into the record. The comment is that the staff of the Sercoupe County Planning Board has previously provided to the town several examples of local laws adopted by the Sercoupe County municipalities, which include Wilton, Northumberland, Milton, and Greenfield, to regulate the location, the review, and permitting of ground-mounted solar energy systems in their respective towns. One of the principal concerns across the country has been how to define the impacts and mitigation of such to existing environment, agricultural land use in the towns, as it will be for Moreau. Such impacts may be both beneficial as well as negative, particularly as incentives are presented to owners of inactive or unproductive farmland. As this may be the case, we would recommend that particular attention is given to the proactive regulation of the use in the town's R5 district, which essentially comprises the town's portion of the Consolidated Ag District number 1. So, what's that? Before I open up to any board members, have any comments for before we do that?
No.
All right. So, I have a sign-in sheet. It's not necessarily a speaking list, but I will go according to the sign-in list to see if those individuals who have signed up would like to speak. And the first name on the list this evening is John Arnold.
It's not just because it's alphabetical. I think everybody can probably hear me from back here. I just want to commend you on the moratorium to give the town time to get zoning in place and regulate this use in the ag district. I was a little concerned when I read in the paper they kept calling these installations a solar farm. These aren't farms. This is an energy-generating facility. Okay? Doesn't mean it doesn't belong. It's just not. Nobody's planting seeds of solar energy. Okay? It can have impacts as far as view sheds. It can have impacts on the environment. And honestly, impacts on usable farmland. So these are not temporary structures by any means. So I commend the town for giving yourself 6 months. We are working on the zoning already. I know that's one of the subjects that we were discussing, as is the other on the agenda this evening. So these are items that we're working on, and hopefully we can get into the zoning and then move forward from there. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. And just a reminder, this is your time to be heard, so the public hearing is not a question and answer session. It's the opportunity for your comments to be made to the board for consideration. The next individual on the list is Ann Kuzniers. Would you like to speak?
My name is Ann Kuzniers. I live at Kent Kane Farm on Annesburg Road. We've been there growing Christmas trees and raising beef for 62 years. We take great pride in our stewardship of the land. Having been on the board back in the 90s when the law was proposed that would have had a dreadful impact on our ag district, I was able, with another town board member, to prevent that proposed law from reaching the supermajority that would have enacted it. So I sort of feel tonight as if, once again, I'm trying to protect the ag district. And that's why I support the moratorium, so that we can look into each detail of the solar farms that are being proposed, so that, in fact, this town board will judiciously decide if it is, in fact, a good thing for the town of Moreau. And just for those of you who are visual learners, the green area on the lower left-hand side map shows just how extensive the ag district is in the town hall. And if all of us want in some way to be good stewards of that precious land, because there will never be any more made by the good Lord. So yes, I thoroughly and wholeheartedly propose a moratorium Let's all see what the facts and proposals are going to be. And finally, how important the impact of these solar farms, as they call them, how they will impact the entire town. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Next individual on the list is Sarah Lynn. Next individual is Paul LaBerge. Would you like to address the board at this time?
No comment today.
Next individual is Roseanne Fortune.
I'm sorry, thank you.
That was a no. Is there a Rosa Weather?
Apologies to the forehead, right? It's Mark Weatherill.
Mark. Sorry about that, Mark.
That's okay.
Would you like
comments? Thank you.
Okay. Next individual that is on the sign-in sheet is Rachel McDermott.
Oh, good evening. Thanks for taking our comments. My family owns a farm on Old West Road. It's approximately 300 acres, and it is partially located in the Ag District. While we do believe that there should be consideration for certain regulations regarding the implementation of so-called solar farms, I think as farmers we are on the other side of the spectrum and are supportive of the development of solar arrays in the town for a number of reasons. I think oftentimes farmers are overly criticized for overuse of pesticides or other negative kind of buzzwords in the community, but we are stewards of the land. And I do believe that whether you're pro-solar or you're against solar, that if the farm is operating their farm and they are maintaining it, that they should be entrusted to be the stewards. And in this case, particularly where our farm is located, we lack a lot of infrastructure. We don't have free-based power. We can't, there's some limitations to our development as farmers down the road, and this allows us to kind of bridge that gap, and we convert some of these to our community. So that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. The last individual I have on the sign-up sheet is Jim Zub.
So, I'm Jim Zub. I'm born in Rensselaer County, Saratoga County, Washington County, Montgomery County, sometimes Ulster County, and also in Westfield, Massachusetts. So, our operation is large, and we're diversified. And first generation, I started farming when I was 17 years old. And so I've been 42 years. I never believed we would be a generational farm. She's here. So I'm looking to protect our assets and our way of life, much like you did, protect your soil, protect your land. But what we have to protect is us. And if we're profitable, we don't need farmland preservation. We don't need all those other things that we have to sign up for. Especially preservation, because that's in perpetuity. And if I'm healthy, if she's healthy, if my grandkids are healthy, they will farm. Seeing this over the 42 years, all of the market factors, the weather, we, if you recall, 1998, the tornado in Mechanicville hit us. Right over the top of us, crushed everything. Was an absolute mess, and we were faced with a decision. Do we stop, quit, change what we do? So, you know, we decided not to and carry on. So, we have to always look for these diversification opportunities. And that's how we look at solar for our operation. Currently, we have a 12.5-acre solar field on our farm in Scatico, which will be expanded to 25. Does it tug at my heartstrings that I'm not out there plowing that soil anymore? Absolutely. But it gives me the opportunity to have a retirement fund in the next 10 years. And that's what I have to watch out for. So the farmland is important. The farmers are more important. I don't support the moratorium. I think maybe in 2 months, you could probably get the zoning laws. In 2 months, there's laws out there. There's towns that have done it. There's ways to craft it. If I can make some, like I said, I do believe in solar fields. And oh, by the way, as you know, they're very site specific. They're very infrastructure sensitive. I mean, you just can't go out there and place them wherever you want. That's a critical factor. So just because we have a big green blotch on the map doesn't mean every acre is conducive to solar. So like I said, we had a solar field on our property, and it just worked out. You know, three phase right there with, you know, our line is capacity, all those factors. So I wouldn't be afraid, not afraid of doing it. You do have to spend a little bit of time, but I think 6 months is way over the top. And if I can make some other recommendations, watch what you do on the tax side. These systems once they're installed, there's no impact to town from a financial perspective. Potentially a fire, a little bit on the fire side. You know, there might be some fire exposure, but not too much. So they are sensitive to that type of thing. And like I said, the reason I bring that up is our town did it the other way. And so our solar development is going to be somewhat compressed. Like I said, that impacts me. It impacts my daughter. It impacts my son. And other people in the community. I think it's critical that we have that opportunity to extend our lives. So, thank you.
Thank you. I no longer have any names on the list signed in, so because we have two public hearings scheduled this evening, could I just have a show of hands of who would like to speak on solar proposed moratorium? All right. So, Patrick Killian is next.
Hi guys, Pat Killian. Glad to see everybody here. As far as getting everybody together and different thoughts as far as what and how we do things, and people are going to be saying this or that or the other thing. There's been things in the paper as far as possible cement being in the ground for solar. There's different things that happen nowadays as far as structure, how things are produced, production. And a couple things as far as what was said in the actual paper. There is no cement or concrete being in the actual soil. And again, we've had a few discussions with Jim Martin, the zone supervisor. And again, when you talk over these things, people have a lot of different ideas what you can do, what you can't do. My father started the farm 70 years ago. So anybody that knows, my father was a steward of the land, worked hard, and we had a big family. We had 8 sisters, 3 brothers, and again, everybody had to work on the farm. I started breaking hay when I was 5 years old, and on a tractor. I thought it was the best thing ever. Boy, was I mistaken. No. But back to what we're talking about, and we can look at the politics, the pros and cons of being a family, what we've worked hard at. I can talk about calls, put spreads, options, strike prices, basis, and again, some of the comments there that we talked about. Solar is not permanent. That being said, that the margins of the profit and what farms have done. And when you look at cows, which we still want to do, I have a daughter that's 14 years old, and she goes, "Dad, I want another 300 cows." And I said, "You're out of your mind." And that being said, again, she goes, "Well, what do you think? What do we have to do to milk? And to be able to keep the farm? I've got 2 kids, one 12 and one 14, Olivia and Brock, and they're saying to me, "Dad, we don't want to see the farm be put into development." And I said, "Well, what we have to do. There's different changes, and we have to adapt as a community, as a town, you know, to see what options that we have and what's offered. And the reason why we have a moratorium is to see the pros and the cons as far as what people like, what people don't like. In the area, as far as where we're at, we would have approximately 10% of our land. So we own 500 acres in the town of Murrow. And that small percentage of being able to use that for solar, you know, you can call it solar farm, or call it whatever you want, but it would still offset those margins, those costs, those taxes of what, you know, we have some great tenants there that we lease the facility and property to that still doesn't cover our taxes. So that being said, this solar that wouldn't be permanent would give us the opportunity for my family, third generation, for my kids. You know, she wants to go to Cornell, be a vet, to still keep the succession of Killian's Dairy Farm going. So I think that between, you know, between my brother, my father, you know, my mother, you know, our family, to be able to keep things going. And again, the politics that's involved, I think, you know, you see other states, you know, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, and you see these solar farms, you know, in our town, in different states. I think it's important that we listen and to be able to understand, like some other people have commented, you know, to be able to take care of your family and, you know, keep that succession going as a business. And so, you know, I've looked at 10 different solar companies and said no to every single one. Now, the other one, we've had one other company that we've actually signed a contract with, and it doesn't mean anything right now, but they're a local company in our community. So that's a big thing, you know, as far as it's not just somebody out of Arizona, out of California, Florida, New York City, you know, we're upstate New York. So we take great pride as far as what and how we do things. And again, this company is a local company, has been, I think, in our town for about 12 years now, between 12 and 15 years, and it is very reputable. So it's not just a company coming in here and saying, here we go, you know, let's put some solar in. So these guys are considerate, and, you know, as far as, I think, you know, we need to adapt as far as, you know, the changes in our country, in our society, our towns, our cities, you know, and be able to, you know, again, you know, I keep saying adapt, but our moratorium as far as seeing what we can and can't do. You know, we want to be considerate, you know, as far as what people think. And, you know, we just want to be able to keep success or be the successor in our farm and keep my father, you know, my mother, my brother, and little Joe, even, you know, my wife, you know, we fought, you know, very, very hard to, you know, be able to keep our farm even where it is right now. But, you know, when I was farming, getting up at 2:30 in the morning, trying to find out, it's like, geez, you know, where are our profits going to come from? And you look at based on our break-evens, you know, the volatility used to be 10, 20, 30 trends. Now it's 3 months. Now it's 6 months. Now it's 9 months. So what do we do? You know, so I think, you know, in order to keep the playing field level, if you will, you know, I think as a farm, and again, you know, some of these contracts as far as the solar, if you will, I don't like saying solar farm because it's not for us again. You know, you would sign a contract for 20 or 30 years, and being able to do that, when the contract's done, you pull it out and you start farming again. So our goal is, as a dairy farmer, a former dairy farmer, would like to be able to have my daughter go to school. And she's 14 now, so her goal is to be out of school by 23 or 24, start milking cows, and yet it would still, you know, as far as what we do and what I do, I'm an electrician right now, and thank God, you know, my father always said, and my mother, go to school, you know, and we need somebody that can be, you know, educated and be in this, whether it's mechanically or electrically, inclined. And you look at, you know, I learned a lot from saying, you know, when I was a kid, I never wanted to be a farmer. You know, and say, all we did was work. But, you know, the role is actually reversed because, you know, if you really enjoy something or love something, you know, you just like it. You know, it's something that you go through life. And some things you learn at an early age you don't like, and then you start doing things, and then you understand, and then you start saying, oh, this is how this works. And, you know, so that being said, you know, I appreciate everybody coming tonight. And I hope this doesn't get dragged out for 6 months, 12 months. You know, it doesn't need to be that way again. But I appreciate everybody, you know, the Candy King Farm, what you guys have done. Todd, you've done a great job, you know, in the advocate. And it's not easy, you know, as far as being in politics and, you know, what you do and how you do things. We appreciate what you do. And I hope that the board, you know, we can agree on something as far as going that route. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, sir. Please state. Pardon?
I'm on.
That's okay. Side. That's okay.
Al Chapman.
Pardon?
Al Chapman.
And your address?
1 Clark Street, South Dakota Falls. When I'm reading this and when I'm hearing these people talk, I understand the concern because it sounds like we're on the verge of outlying solar farms or whatever, or ground mounting. But I don't think that it's completely excluding anybody from going through a variance process while this is in effect, or for that matter, for the town to terminate the local law ahead of time once they've concluded the study that they're going to do on the zoning impacts. Because it's my understanding, I don't know what I'm supposed to ask questions, it's my understanding that this would be for the entire town, not just the ag district. Is that correct?
I'll just offer it for commercial solar arrays, not residential.
Right. Okay, so really, it's not shutting the whole thing down, because if you come to the variance stage and you present that, nobody's saying you're not going to be able to do it. It's just that you got to apply for variance and show what you're going to do so that it doesn't conflict with something that's a future zoning change that might be coming down the road. That's basically what I'm reading from this book. Just want to add that.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on the proposed moratorium?
Vince for 163 Fort Everglades. You know, I know government and telling you what to do is difficult to swallow at times, but it's important that we have an even playing field so everybody understands what the rules are. And without that, there's always cheaters out there, whether you want to admit it or not, but there's always somebody that's going to try to take a little an advantage or something. So you need rules. And that helps the local government, the planning board, to be able to, you know, establish good policies and be able to maintain for the district and the community.
Thank you, Mr. Zook.
I would invite any of you and or anybody here to come look at our solar array in Skagit on our farm. You can see it right from the road or pull in, and we'd love to visit with anybody about it. And if I can make a suggestion, I know it's a public hearing for 6 months, and I'm always really uncomfortable with that kind of thing. If I could compel you to say, listen, we'll go 1 month, and you'll see what kind of progress you make, and at that point, hopefully, and like I said, many towns already have zoning in place and they've made recommendations and ways to go. And then revisit in a month at board's discretion and go from there. Again, having been through it with SCATCO, they did it to us in 3 days, or 7 days, public hearing notice, and they shut us down and it was horrible. And we didn't even know. The next day, somebody called me and said, oh, there was a solar meeting last night. They did a moratorium. What? You didn't even have a chance to come. So, again, I mean, that's my position, so thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to speak on the solar moratorium?
Actually, I'm Mary Kelly Spurrell, and I'm here to support our brother, Pat Kelly, tonight. So I just want to say there are a lot of us here just to be here to support what Pat said.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I wasn't going to come and talk today, but I just wanted to, like...
Please state your
name. Yeah, my name is Paul Baird. I'm from Morlex, full disclosure. So I am from a solar company that's considering a site in Monroe. So my background is environmental science, so I've studied sustainable development, and I've been a huge advocate of renewable energy since coming out of university. And I think that community solar projects is the way to go. It helps diversify money into towns, revenue to towns, instead of having one big generator in one location in one town. And this way, many towns in different locations, different counties, can all benefit from tax income from having solar farms built with them. But I agree. I think the moratorium is good because the current laws don't consider a solar development. They consider it as just a big power plant. And it doesn't have to be like that. There's ways that you can develop a solar plant or a solar farm that can help benefit the site. And some of the things that we're looking at today are doing even dual use. And we considered this with Pat, where we want to graze sheep or graze small cattle. Like, these are considerations that we're making. And you know what? While that solar farm is temporarily there for 20 or 30 years, we're giving a break to that soil, because all that active industrial farming that might be taking place on there with corn, you have to put inputs into it. Pesticides, what's the other thing? Nutrients. And it's hard on the soil. Like, corn just takes everything out of it. If we give the land a break for just a little bit of time, maybe graze animals on there, recharge the soil. You know, you're going to have grass on there, it'll stay there, the roots will embed itself, and the manure from the animals will stay, you know, inbred in the ground as well. Build up that organic matter base. And then, you know what, when the solar farm's done, the new technologies are out there to replace the solar farm, which is easy to take out. Because as mentioned, some of the racking is just either piled in, and you just take it out as fast as we put it in, or it's spiraled in. We don't want to use concrete. It's very expensive. Maybe here or there we might have to, depending on the soil depth. But overall, it's easy to take out, and that soil is going to be wonderful. Like, it's going to be full of nutrients when we're done. I'm just speaking on, like, you know, from a sustainable point of view. And like I mentioned, that I think the moratorium is good because it's going to give the town a chance to review what it needs to know about solar, development of solar, where it works, where it doesn't work. And I hope that ultimately, with the moratorium, that fair, good regulation is put in place that, you know, it makes sense for the town. And I know that prime soils and prime farmland in that farm district is really important to many of you. Many of you that have been in that land for many, many years, and I understand. But, you know, we just want to use a little piece of it, and it's temporary. And when we're done, we hope that that land is going to be in better condition than when we left it. And that's all I'm saying.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Anyone else? If not, we are not, as I mentioned earlier, we are not going to close the public hearing. We will leave it open until a further point in time. That way we will be able to receive for the record and for town board consideration any written comments. My suggestion would be to provide them either electronically or in person to myself, for the town clerk, and we'll make sure that they're included in the record, and they'll be considered as part of the discussion by the full board. Just to be clear, we're going to move on to the next public hearing shortly. The moratorium, the purpose of the moratorium is we're not doing anything different than what is already provided for by our local code now. Right now, you cannot have these structures in the Ag District. What the moratorium is doing is it's allowing to have up to 180 days to consider the technology, whether the board, based on comments from the public, wants to change the local ordinance, keep it the same, put restrictions on them. You know, this technology is evolving, and in 2016, New York State put together a model solar energy law, which many communities are adopting across the state. I know several communities here in Saratoga County have already done that. And some of the things that they require as part of the local ordinance is that, you know, setbacks be considered, that these entities have decommissioning clauses where money is set aside, so if for whatever reason either the technology changes or these structures are no longer in use, that there are monies that allow to be removed from the property. So these are all things that we're going to be taking into consideration. We want to make sure we do it right. And there's pluses and minuses on both sides of the equation. The town board is going to do its due diligence, and hopefully we'll have a workable solution that benefits all those who spoke here this evening. And to do that, we're going to have some time. And that's why we're looking to have the 180-day moratorium in place. So with that, I'd like to thank everyone for coming out, making their comments to the board. Government works best when we hear from the public that are most impacted by the decisions that we make here. And this will help us immensely in making sure we do the right thing. So thank you for coming out this evening. And with that, I'm going to roll into opening the public hearing on local law number 2, the moratorium on multifamily dwellings in the town of Rock. So would anybody like to comment for the board regarding that proposed moratorium? Mr. Spohr.
I think I've expressed to the board how dissatisfied I am with the amount of apartments, and I guess the question is, when is enough enough? And I guess from what I can see, it seems like not only do you have construction ongoing, but there's applications out there for more property to develop more units. And what's even more frustrating is there's no start date for these units and no completion date for these units. So at some of the planning board meetings that have attended approval for these developments, there's always a traffic study done and there's never a problem. There's a sewer study, one, never a problem. Yet, how do you really know you haven't made a mistake when you got 3 or 4 developments already backed up that haven't even started? So, it's really, in my mind, in the area that I live in, it's to me, it's way too much. And I think enough is enough, and I think the zoning needs to be looked at and massaged and stripped out a little bit. That's my feeling.
Thank you.
I support your work.
Would anybody else like to address the board for this?
I'll chat again. I know that I'm from Southwest Falls, so I'm not really involved in this municipality, but I was on the comprehensive planning board along with Ethan, about 6 other people that looked at this moratorium concept because we were being overwhelmed with complexes being shoehorned everywhere in adjacent R1s, R2, which kind of gave
kind of gave way to people paving their front lawns for parking, midnight basketball, and a place where people, you know, I'm sympathetic with farm stories, and we also in a residential setting, we had the same sort of situation. So we got this local law passed in the village of South Glens Falls for a moratorium, and now it's set to expire in October, after it be renewed. Still haven't had any zoning action. We've gotten to where we're having comprehensive plan workshops where we explain the suggestions of all the different things. It wasn't just about that particular issue. It was all across the board, where we want to be, you know, 20 years or whatever they redo it. So it's very frustrating, but we need to have a good look at that, because there's things that come up that were never considered when you were talking about a village that was adjacent to a paper mills, and there were little houses that were sort of mill houses, and then they're turned, there's a lot between them, now they're turned into a four parking complex where people park in the front lawn. Even though we have codes, we don't have a full-time code enforcer building inspector, so none of this stuff really ever gets fixed. But we did extensive walk-arounds of the neighborhoods, and nobody there wants these multifamily dwellings, except certain members of the village board seem to think it's a good idea and somehow increases the tax base. And after looking at that, it really doesn't. They're actually better off in single-family homes. And so I support it for the town of Morrell, and I support it for the village of South Glens Falls. Just don't know when they're going to actually do it. But it's a good idea, and I don't have any problem, and neither should anybody else, study any of these things. One of the things we were getting was these giant complexes put in where no engineering studies were done by the village. And it was my understanding that if you had a big complex with like 150 units being planned, you would have to study the sewer, the water supply, the fire hydrant location, all this stuff. And that would have to be something that the village would engage an engineer to look at, and then the money for that study would be put in escrow by the builder, and then that would be lost if they decided, you know, they didn't want to spend that money on it. And they could do their own study if they wanted, but when the builder's going to say, everything's cool, you've got money, don't even worry about it, you can't have that be the final arbiter of what actually happens. You have to have that whatever it is, whoever it is, Delaware Energy, whatever. You have to have that paperwork in front of you. That then you can go back to and say, what happened? How come we don't have the capacity? How come the sewers aren't moving? You know, why do we have to keep going in there and excavate, especially when you have a sewer system that's as old as a village of South Glens Falls? And you don't even know what you're getting into when you go to repair it or put a new line in. You just don't know. So it could be a super expensive, thereby negating the tax benefit of putting one of these things in. I just think it's a good idea. I think the moratorium should be looked at, and the comprehensive plan should be viewed in the feedback from the people. It's all about what the people kind of want, not just what's permissible under whatever guidelines we decide to adopt that week. So it's a good idea to have this all laid out, and it's also a good idea for the benefit of the building inspector, because he doesn't have to make a decision based on a main concept. It's not outlined. You have to have an ironclad. It makes his job a lot easier. He can then go to the building and say, well, you don't have the setback necessary. You can't turn a building sideways and call that the front yard. You can't do that. But if that's not outlined in any kind of code or any kind of local law, fixing the vagaries, you got nothing to work with. Building inspector that is, he's left on his own. He's out there floating. And it's not fair to him. And we'll start talking.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, sir.
Kevin Holmes, 380 Rollins Road, Barrow. Moratorium is probably a good idea. The only thing I would say, and I hate to say this because I'm not a good person, I'm trying to do maybe even more, but I think you should add in pre-existing non-conforming lots. I think pre-existing non-conforming lots in the town row are a big issue. We're ending up with houses that lots that are just not big enough for the lot, the house. And I would think that needs to be addressed. And when we're looking at a town at our zone, we need to look at that. I'm sure you're on a zoning board, and we've had a lot of those come before us, and I think it puts a burden on that board as to how to handle those pre-existing non-conforming lots. And I think this is an opportunity for us to address that. That's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
Keith Comstock, Fort Clark Street. Been working with Al for the last couple of years in the village and trying to get the zoning done. We first started off getting petitions and going around speaking to numerous neighbors. And over the last couple of years, you know, whether I'm at Hannaford or Ace Hardware at the bank today, I talked to just about everybody. Only one person I've talked to in the last 2 years is not scared of all these apartments in the area. You see people's faces and it's like, I think people think this is a bad idea, what's going on in the area. And it's pretty much 100%. So we should look into it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes,
ma'am. I'm Jane McFarlane. I live in Hansford. I own a vacant piece of land. I've had it for sale a couple of different times over the last couple of years, and have not been able to sell it. I've gone to the zoning administrator and spoke to Mr. Martin and found out that I could put a duplex on it, to fight it for a piece of property, but I could put a duplex on it. I spoke to Mr. Martin I don't know enough of the facts to know in support or against a moratorium. Certainly I feel that we need to, for the sake of the community, to find out, to have a plan for our development, for the traffic increase, for the water, for the septic and such. I'm asking for the board's consideration. Two-family dwellings have not been an issue, and I ask for the board's consideration to take those, remove those from the plan.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
I'm really proud of every practice. John Arnold, 30 Palmer Ridge. I'm also on the planning board. I've been asking people that come in front of our planning board for the last 10 years, complaining or opposing multifamily development in our town, please come to the town and ask for this, for a zoning change, for a moratorium, whatever. I'm a little disappointed that I don't see, other than this wonderful gentleman who I was so happy to see come in, I don't see that outpouring of people. I think when it's right next door to them, they show up and that's it. And I'm sorry to say that. I don't want you to think that reflects on the support for this action. There is support in our planning board meetings when there's a multi-family development in front of us. It's not unusual to have this room full of people that are very concerned about it. I would just mention to you that there is also a stipulation in this town law considered that allows for a variance for an individual project. So you could actually probably move ahead with your request. Okay? Anyways, that's up to the town, of course. I support this for the same reason I supported the last one. And that is, this is an issue that affects a lot of people. We are working on our code. It would be really nice to be able to get ahead of this by getting our code written and doing it as quickly as we can, and maybe changing the direction of some areas in the town. I think solar development is not way ahead of us right now, but the multifamily dwellings thing has gotten ahead of us, and I think it's a great idea to put the brakes on for 6 months. You have done a great job in formulating it so it allows for variances and it allows for some work, and it allows for it to be less time if we do get that code updated in time. So I thank you for doing your due diligence and for looking into this.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Okay, and just one other thing. I got onto the planning board of Southwest Falls. I looked at a number of different projects as I came through. And one thing that struck me as very odd is that there's a no side setback in the commercial district. So you theoretically build two buildings that basically share a wall, and they pose the question, how do you build the second building? How do you put the siding on the second building if there's no setback? But to go back to what the other fellow said there, the people come in, when did this building built on their line, freaking out. But then they never show up again. And they got to show up as you're doing this, as you know, because that's how it gets done if you don't feel that public sentiment. So the idea being that unless it's actually in your face, you're not going to come down. It ain't working. It's not going to work. So the next step then is kind of a community activist taking to the streets with a petition, again, do this whole thing all over again on our part and maybe on your part, because you have to have that consensus, or otherwise it'll just be chaos. People just be arguing one way or the other. But, it makes no sense to have things like no side setback. There's other stuff like that. That's not just stuff, but there's a whole bunch of stuff that's not clearly defined. If you look at the chart that gives you the parameters for the different districts, there's just no side setback mentioned in the commercial district. And apparently that was done a long time ago, so they can do like these Midtown Plaza type things where they're all just individual buildings all sandwiched together or whatever. But that stuff's got to be changed, and that's why the moratorium always is a good idea to sit back and study this stuff. I know you got Jim Martin working on your comprehensive plan or it's concluded or whatever they do, whatever stage it's at right now. You got to have that done, and then, what you're doing is right. Think about it. Nobody's saying you're never going to be able to build to it, never going to be able to. It's got to be considered from an intelligent position and fair direction. I'm not trying to get back at any particular builders, whatever. You got to just look at it and make an intelligent judgment based on things like not only your code, but the fire code, the fire requirements in New York State, the spaces between buildings, so you get apparatus between them, all that kind of stuff. And that's what the moratorium allows you to do, to put those things in place. If you don't do that, then you're never going to straighten out any of these situations. They'll just be reoccurring. This time I'm really upset.
Thank you. Would any other member in public have some story?
I think I have a few minutes left of my 5 minutes. I just wanted to add that I agree with Mr. Elms. I would like to see you take some kind of action to put the brakes on pre-existing non-conforming lots. My understanding of them is they were put into the code to protect property owners' rights back in 1985 or 89, whenever the zoning was passed. And what we're seeing is new owners are coming in and buying these properties. And because of the way it's written, we have one off of Harrison Avenue that was too small for a 4-unit multifamily dwelling. But the way the zoning administrator read it was because it was a pre-existing non-conforming lot, they were pretty much allowed to do whatever they wanted as long as they met side lot or side and front and rear setbacks. Okay, so that zone, which is where these multifamilies are going, require 5,000 square feet of land for every dwelling, for every unit. This one ended up with 4 units on 16,000 square feet. Because of that stipulation that was put in to protect the person that owned the property in 1985 when the zoning passed. So I was already going to bring this up. When we do the zoning, we need to find a way to protect those property owners that isn't in perpetuity, that isn't forever, and doesn't transfer to the next owner. Because if you bought that lot at only 16,000 square feet, and the zoning already said you can only do 5,000 square feet per unit, nothing was taken away from you. You knew going in what it was. So, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? If not, we are going to also leave the public hearing open so that anyone may submit written testimony to the board for consideration. I would just like to, for the record, have the town clerk confirm by date of publication the public hearing notice was?
Yes, public. June 15th.
Okay, thank you. And the last item I have for this evening on the public hearing for the moratorium on multiple housing, two-family housing moratorium is that we have correspondence from Saratoga County Planning Board. They approve we're doing with the moratorium. They do have a comment, which I would like to read into the record. The comment of the board is that the town board may want to consider whether a 6-month duration to allow for enactment of a revision to the town zoning ordinance will be sufficient for studying the comprehensive land use plan and address issues related to the growth and development of multifamily dwellings. It may be the board's determination that a one-year term will allow for more time for public comment, input, and board staff discussion without the burden of a tight schedule. This may be more appealing than an extension after initial 6 months and then the possibility of needing another extension after that. We note that by definition, the types of multifamily dwellings being considered, reviewed, and subject to the imposition of a moratorium are not differentiated between fee ownership and rental housing units, and as such, the review of density, impacts, and mitigation associated with both types will be considered. Discussion among town board members and zoning staff may help, if warranted, to further develop the definition, needs, and standards to determine what constitutes the provision of a variance from the local law. So with that, we'll keep the moratorium open. We're going to, as I mentioned earlier, continue to receive public comment on both moratorium and proposed local law number one and two. And I don't know if the board member, any board member have additional comments related to either the public hearings this evening. All right. If not, thank you for attending the public hearing. We're going to open up our audit meeting, end of the month audit meeting. We're only 30 minutes behind schedule, but I'm sure we can make up time here.
Thank you, folks.
Thanks.
We're rock and roll, Rudy.
He's got some of these. He's got some of these because there's nothing down.
We got some.
You've already signed that. You've already signed that.
All right.
Can you talk to
the table? No, this isn't
Yeah, thank you.
killed it.
Split them up and I was quick to go.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. The next item is we have a voucher from UniFirst where we're being billed for restocking charges. Nowhere in the contract that we signed does it say that we agree to pay restocking charges. My recommendation would be to back out the total amount that they billed us, which is $78, from the voucher. And then pay. Is that what you're looking for?
Yes, I think I already backed it up.
You did back it up? Yeah, so I need town board authority to pay the voucher.
I'd like to take it out or not. Yes, I did take it out.
All right, so you need, you want, so I'll need a resolution to pay that voucher in the amount of $252.26.
So,
second. Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. Discussion. We have a copy of the signature for the voucher from GA Bobby and Sons Incorporated. I need authority to accept the signature. the Pappy's signature for a voucher in the amount of $40.07.
So. Second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. The next voucher, I need authority to pay Lewis and Greer an invoice for May 2019, which includes copies and travel to town hall and the cost associated with the mediator in the amount of $8,868.60.
So, second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes.
Until we can get the contract.
Okay, so we have a bill related to the sewer district and LaBerge Engineering in the amount of $68,568.45. We have not received authority to charge against the funding, right?
We don't know if we have. We're in the process. We haven't received
that. Yeah, so we need to verify that we can bill against the funding that we have been approved for. So until we have an answer to that, my recommendation is to hold the voucher.
Agreed.
And I'll need a resolution to transfer funds in the amount of $36,000 from account A1990.4, which is general contingent account, and $36,000 will be transferred to A1620.423, which is the general building sprinkler to cover expenses related to the repair of the town hall emergency sprinkler system.
Well,
two
individual?
Yeah.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. And the next motion I'll need is to that $1,431.64 be transferred from account A1620.401, General Buildings and Municipal Complex, and $825.80 be transferred from A1620.402, which is General Buildings Annex Building, and $825.80 be transferred from A1620.403, General Buildings Sheriff Substation, and $3,083.24 to transfer to A1620.4 General Buildings. The transfer of funds is to cover the expenses related to the fire alarm and pavement of the entryway to the municipal complex.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. And one final resolution for the audit meeting to increase appropriations by $1,835 to account HP7197.201, which is a direct capital project, adaptive playground. This is for legal and engineering expenses related to the adaptive playground project.
So,
second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes.
Second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. And the final motion to adjourn the second. Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rudy. All righty. Rudy, thank you, sir.
You're welcome,
Mr. Clay.
You're welcome.
One more meeting to go. You all set?
Yep.
Madam Clerk?
Yep.
Ma'am. All right. I'd like to welcome everyone to a regular town board meeting. Town board meeting for June 25th, 2019. And with that, we'll have a roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Here.
Councilman Noonan?
Here.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Here. And we'll have a pledge of allegiance. The pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. First item on the agenda this evening is the approval of minutes for June 11th, 2019.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. The June 14th is a bid opening, so we'll receive and file the bid opening. Does anyone need to set a meeting, any workshops?
Where do we at with university?
So we don't need to do anything with that right now. I have a correspondence from this morning. I have it today from Lisa Corkle, and I'll forward that to you, but it doesn't require any action on part of the town.
Okay, good.
We do have some other applicants.
Yeah, we need to schedule him, or that applicant, and Marco Zimmer, back in. Or in, for the
first round, yeah. So we could do that. We could do it before the next town meeting, if you want, or do you want to do it?
I'm okay either way. That would be, we just put it today on that. The 9th?
Yeah.
The 9th?
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah.
I think it's a holiday week coming up. I think it's a holiday week coming up. So we're a little busy, so we might see it.
Okay, so why don't we, this will be the initial.
6:30.
We want a little more based on.
A little more possible.
Let me find a little bit more at this point.
Okay, so why don't we do 6 o'clock within the executive session for purpose of that? Sure. Doing interviews.
Okay.
For perspective.
And the 9th, you said, right?
Yeah. I have on the agenda fire alarm suppression and annual inspection, and what we did is we through resolution authorized spending up to $1,575 for the semi-annual sprinkler inspection. But there's also a separate proposal that you provided to us for the annual fire alarm suppression inspection, which at this time is $1,575. Because we're all set for this year, my recommendation is to take it up during budget workshops and make sure we get that included for the 2020 budget. And don't take any action on that. Item 4 is I have a letter regarding the Turn the Town Steel National Awareness Campaign for Ovarian Cancer. It says, Dear Administrator, Turn the Town's Teal is a national campaign to create awareness of ovarian cancer, its subtle symptoms and risk factors. Our volunteers tie ribbons, which are biodegradable and made in the USA, primarily in town centers and providing stores, health clubs, spas, libraries, etc., symptom cards, and information pertaining to ovarian cancer. We do this in September, which is National Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. Ribbons go up on or about September 1st and are taken down no later than September 30th. This will be the 11th successful year of raising awareness and saving women's lives. And you can visit their website at www.turnthetownsteel.org to see their campaign at work. There's no early detection test for ovarian cancer, which is why we need women and men to be aware of the known symptoms and risk factors. If detected in the early stages, the survival rate for ovarian cancer is 90 to 95%, which is why this awareness campaign is so very, very critical. Thanks to the support of towns and cities like yours, we know for a fact that women's lives are being saved through this campaign. Your signature on the bottom of this letter will indicate your permission for our campaign. Kindly return the signed letter back to the volunteer whose name and contact information is below. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to email us at the same email address. Most sincerely, Jane McNeil, President. So I would ask for authorization from the town board for me to sign the approval for this good cause.
So, second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. So I'm asking the town board for authority to have them move forward and order those hydrant adapters. This money would come out of account 83.10.4 and 83.10.4. Well, I guess we're, I don't know why this is done twice, but that's the account that come out.
They're two different districts, I think.
Oh,
they're in District 6 and District 5.
Four and District 3.
Or
so
right.
It would be ordering six adapters for District 4 and five adapters for District 3. Our current balance in that fund is $27,339.28 for District 3, and for District 4, the balance is $109,036.46. And my recommendation would be to move forward with placing the order.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Discussion.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. And as part of my conversation with the fire chief, he would like the town to again move forward with the program that we had in place a few years ago where we were converting the hydrants over to the storage fitting. I think we're doing like 5 years. So I told him that is something that we take into consideration at budget time. That's part of the water department discussion. So we had a very good conversation. We're certainly on the same page, and moving forward. So that's all good. Item 6 is repair of the old town hall. We do have one quote. We reached out to a handful of others which either were too busy or would not provide a quote at this time. I know council member LeClaire was working on this. She's unable to be here this evening. I'm not sure if the board would like to move forward on this at this time or continue to work on getting additional quotes. But the quote that I have for the work right now is from Dave Stewart in the amount of $3,100. And it's to provide supply labor and material for repair of all broken and missing slate on the building, including good faith effort to repair anything that I can find that might possibly leak. It would also include repair of the fascia, crown molding on the east end of the building, removing bad sections, installing with new sections, matching as close as possible to the detail. It includes one coat of primer and one coat of exterior white paint on the new wood. Item 3 on this quote is to remove all debris with complete cleanup, and the fourth would be payment in full within 14 days of completion. Obviously, to make our payments at the annual or the monthly audit meeting, so we have to reach out to him and point that out. So I don't know if the board of pleasures at this time.
No. I mean, I'd like to see us get the work done. There's some obvious questions that with. I need to make assumptions on is this quoted in price at prevailing rate?
Right.
And the other criteria. Yeah. Maybe we'll certificate concern.
If he's doing it himself, obviously you're not paying labor, what is prevailing wage?
Well, he informed them to find it.
So we'll have to get those answers before we move forward.
Is it sole proprietor or some individual?
It is possible. Yeah. I think we should table it a little more detail from council member LeClaire.
Love to see us get the work done.
Item 7 is Highway Department request. The first one I have is from Paul to purchase gasoline, which was budgeted for in the 2019 budget year, from Global Montello Group, which is on the state contract PC 68456. We currently have a balance of $46,595.82 as of June 3rd, and he's looking for PO to open the amount of $10,000.
Motion to approve.
Second. Any discussion? Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. Along the same lines, we have a request from the Highway Superintendent for purchase of diesel fuel for 2019 from Sprague Operating Resources in the amount of $20,000. This will be under state contract PC 68214. And we have a balance of $46,595.82. And account DB 5142.460.
Motion to approve.
Second. Discussion. Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. So, the bid opening that we received and filed had two quotes in there, but because of the amount, it has to go through a formal bid process. Is that correct, Kathy?
Right. I think what occurred was the bids came in at a price lower than the county contract, so you don't accept the county contract, but that being the case, if that is the case, if I could speak English, then you have to go out formal bidding, and not just an RFP.
And we also have, well, we received two proposals. One was taped to the highway department's door.
That's my understanding.
Which I don't know why that happened, and of course, I would not be inclined to accept that because it wasn't going through the process of specifying. So I guess we have to put it out the bid properly now.
Yes.
That's from state contract. So we will make these two individuals, three individuals aware.
Yeah, what we would do is reject all of this.
Okay. So I'll be looking for a motion to reject the RFP for the Palmerton Heights project. So.
Second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. So do we need a resolution for that?
No. That's fine. Well, you
want to
put it out to bid, but
yeah.
You don't know when you want the...
So you prepared the documents for it? How's that
going to work? I can talk to Paul. I don't know.
Yeah, I have no
communication.
Yeah, I have no communication with my... All right, so as it stands now, we'll reject everything, and you'll work with the highway superintendent, and you'll try it again.
Yes.
Item 8 is the adoption of the New York State Election Day voting policy, which was passed by the state legislature, signed by the governor, in relation to providing time off for employees to vote on election day, whether it's the general election or primary day. And to conform to state law, we will have to adopt a resolution. Do you want to read the election day voting policy before we move forward with the resolution?
The policy. Election Day Voting Policy. Election Law 3-110 of the State of New York authorizes all registered voters to take off as much time from his or her employment that will enable him or her to vote in any election up to 3 hours without loss of pay. If an employee requires working time off to vote, the employee shall notify his or her department head not less than 2 working days before the day of the election that he or she requires time off to vote in accordance with the provisions of Election Law 3-110-2 of the State of New York. Such notification must be in writing and may be submitted by email. In the case of employees who work Monday through Friday, notification must be received by the department head no later than noon on the Friday prior to the election. Failure to timely comply with the notification provisions of this paragraph shall result in the automatic disapproval of the employee's request for time off. The employee shall be allowed time off for voting only at the beginning or end of his or her working shift pursuant to the provisions of Election Law 3-110-3. In order to ensure proper department staffing, the department head shall have the discretion to designate which employees may take time off at the beginning of his or her shift and which employees may take off at the end of his or her shift, taking into account the preference of the employee. The employee's time off should be limited to the time needed to enable him or her to vote at their designated election district polling place. The town reserves the right to investigate and confirm the amount of time needed to enable each employee to vote at their designated polling place and the town shall have the right to credit any time taken off in excess of such time that would enable the employee to vote against the employee's accrual time. Not less than 10 working days before every election, each department head shall post conspicuously in his or her department where it can be seen as employees come or go to their place of work. A notice setting forth the provisions of Election Law 3-110 in this policy. Such notice shall be kept posted until the close of the polls on Election Day. The policy shall apply only to town employees who are registered to vote.
Thanks, Anne. So we only have to announce the resolution, right? Are you ready to vote?
You're adopting the resolution, which that's called.
Got it. All right. So would you kindly read the resolution?
Resolution Town Board, whereas the adopted 2019-2020 New York State budget includes a provision enacting Election Law 3-110 of the State of New York, which requires all employers in the state to allow an employee who is a registered voter such time off from work as will enable him or her to vote in any election up to 3 working hours without loss of pay. And whereas Election Law 3-110 further provides that an employee shall be allowed time off for voting only at the beginning or end of his or her working shift, as the employer may designate unless otherwise mutually agreed. And whereas the Town of Moreau desires to adopt a new Election Day voting policy in conformance with Election Law 3-110. Now therefore be it resolved that the Town of Moreau hereby adopts the attached Election Day voting policy, and be it further resolved that the Supervisor's Office shall distribute copies of the new Election Day voting policy to all town employees.
Thank you.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the resolution for the Election Day voting policy.
Second.
Any discussion? If not, roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. Item 9 is a request for a road closure on Daffodil Drive. This board member has a copy from the resident. There's also a map that's included. They're looking to close the very end of the cul-de-sac on Daffodil Drive for the purpose of a graduation party on July 6th.
I think it's probably just an idea. I don't think they will impact too much. It doesn't look like anybody's really going to be impacted, considering it's a cul-de-sac and everybody to their property.
And yeah, the only traffic that is blocked is that going to the residence of the person requesting. That's a road being closed. The resolution on that one. I guess
to close it, yeah.
Motion to approve the request to close 22 Daffodil Drive in Town Moreau for the time specified on July 6th.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. Item 10 is the board members have received a resignation from the bar. Member Andrew Sark, in a memo from our assessor, she says Andy has served as a dedicated, knowledgeable, and very valuable Board of Assessment Review member since 1973, always ensuring the town of Moreau taxpayers are treated fairly and with respect. Therefore, on behalf of myself and the entire bar, we would like to thank Andy for his many years of dedicated service and wish him the best. His term will, he'll finish out his term that will end at the end of this year, 2019. So the motion to accept.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzniers?
Yes. Item 11 at this time is a privilege of the floor. Would anybody like to address the board? Mr. D.
May 29th, the town hall was given a piece of property from Lehigh Cement on Van Buren Street. Where is that exactly on Van Buren, and do you have any intention of using it for any purpose?
Yeah, so, yes, the purpose of that, I know council can speak to it in greater detail, is for for the,
the master meter?
Yes, okay. For the master meter.
Yeah, so it's being used for the installation of a master meter vault that's being installed in there. So it doesn't have a purpose. So the city of Glens Falls is going to build the master meter vault, and then it becomes part of, you know, the town is going to be able to use it at that point. That's the purpose of that.
Okay. Bid you got on the old town hall. Now, I can't hear to it. What was the figure?
$3,100.
$3,100.
It was a bid of just a quote.
And that's for just exterior work?
For the roof and the exterior work.
Okay, kind of a band-aid. Now, did anybody ever have an architect advantage to look at this building on the inside and see exactly what it's going to cost the taxpayers to put that building back, even to be handicapped, accessible? It's got an old rickety ramp going up there. The bathrooms are in the cellar. How much money is that going to cost to rehab that building to meet your needs?
Right. So to answer your question, we have not had an architect look at it. Our intention is to have professionals look at it, see what would be involved to get it ADA compliant, and based on some possible uses that we're looking at. And we'll discuss that at budget time. We're not going to expend money. We're having budgeted monies for an overhaul of the building because we don't know whether we're moving forward with utilizing it or selling it. Personally, based on conversations I've had with actually a government entity, I'd like the town to retain it if they can use it. And I think it would be a great benefit to our residents. But we're still early in the conversation on that.
Does that mean, remember back in the day, this was a big pitch to get this building where you are today? Is that building so unsafe that the people that cleaned the building wouldn't even wash the windows because they were afraid it would fall off? The boilers wore out. Now we're going back, 8 years now, 7. And here we are, many years later, and the building was falling apart back then, and you needed a new building. And now you got the new building, you want to go back and try and make this a new building. And it's going to cost a lot of money. How many people are going to work there?
That I don't know, but I think if the entity agrees to utilize the building, regardless of how many people work there, I have a huge benefit, positive benefit from the service side of our community. Yes, ma'am.
Supervisor Cruzeniers, I was just wondering if you guys have gotten any complaints about duck itch from Sandbar Beach. A mom was telling me that her son was so infested from playing on the shore that there were lots of other babies playing around there too, that she took her son to 3 doctors, and I was just wondering if you've heard anything else about that.
I have not received any information as to that issue. Based on what you're saying, though, it sounds like it's serious, and we can look into it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can just speak briefly with a little additional information. I spoke to one of our lead lifeguards just last night, asked her, we were talking about the job, asked her how the cruise situation was this year. She said it's better than it's been in the other year. That doesn't speak to the fact it might not be an issue, but at least to put some context around it, in her opinion, Ashley Smocko is the employee best that it's been ever. Okay. So we'll look into it for sure.
Anyone else?
Good evening, down Midtown, Seeker Lane. I just had a few suggestions here tonight that pretty much amount to the fact that the town is pretty prosperous and it's going to experience a lot more growth soon. So I just thought maybe some of these suggestions could be looked into. I know you will attest to the fact that it's probably more than full-time hours currently, but my thought was that the town might want to convert to a full-time supervisor, or hire a town manager who's politically unaffiliated, that works with everybody, to do all the grunt work and report back to the board. Could do budget work, could even do human resources, everything that a normal county or town manager would do. Another suggestion is that that the town contract with an experienced grant researcher slash writer. This person would not be an employee. They could probably arrange, which I've heard in the past, arrange that they get a percentage of the particular grants they bring in. There's a lot of projects that are going to be going on, and if the town could try and alleviate some of the burden by bringing in grants, having somebody that's full-time on their own time, of course, to find out where these grants are and apply for them. If you don't go with a town manager, I also said hire a part-time or full-time human resources manager to take over, obviously, any town government, town, city, or village. It's complicated these days. You really need somebody who has experience or educational background. Another suggestion is that you add a privilege to the floor at the top of the agenda. I've seen this done in other municipalities, and that's so people, instead of waiting to the end, they may want to speak on something that's on the agenda, and that gives them an opportunity, especially if there's going to be a vote, aside from public hearings, especially if there's going to be a vote or some action taken later on an agenda item. On the fire hydrants question, a lot of legalities involved, but is there a chance that maybe it could be researched that have the developer or the property owner where the deficient hydrants are, have them pay for suitable proper hydrants to be installed or actually install them at their own, with their own labor? There's a lot of legalities probably there, private property, or if the developer's even a business anymore. And real quickly, I'll try to wrap this up, you know, there's a limit. On your Route 9 traffic congestion problems and the project going on there with the sewer, if you could give the DOT, is that my 3 minutes? If you could give the DOT, since you have such a good relationship suddenly, suggest that to alleviate the problem, especially since the state is looking at that exit, that they decide to go with either 4 lanes of traffic or at least in spots have 2 lanes and alternate them on sides. The best example would be coming off the Northway north on 9 during rush hour. If you have two lanes there, it would help the backups. Plus, eventually you could have a sign up saying right turn, must take right turn once you're approaching Reynolds Road. So that would alleviate some of that traffic, I think. And on top of that, if the state has to, except National Grid, has to move the utility lines so they can get a little more width to the roads, they could probably talk National Grid into burying those lines at the same time, maybe at their cost. Just food for thought.
Thank you. I will comment on a couple items regarding the full-time supervisor. There's no set hours for elected officials under election law. They can work whatever hours they want. But I will tell you this, because I campaigned on it. I do this job full-time. I do it more than full-time. The amount of progress that we've had in a very short time with this administration, which has been a year and a half, is 20-fold over previous administrations. And that doesn't happen working part time. I will attest to it as a 24/7 job. And I like to do it. I like to solve problems. I've been doing it all my life in another capacity for a greater electorate, larger electorate. But I had a lot more help. And I consider it a full time. Regarding the traffic, I'm a member of the Adirondack Glens Falls Transportation Council. We have periodic policy meetings with representatives from the various communities, DOT, the county, DPWs. And at the last meeting, which was held, I think it was last week, the Exit 17 traffic issue was an agenda. And myself and the mayor were there, and we commented on suggestions and possible solutions. DOT is looking at the comments that we made. It comes down to funding and what their priorities are. I do know that there's an intention to rework Exit 17. What that looks like remains to be seen, but they're accepting input from the community leaders on that, so I think that'll be beneficial to our situation. Regarding privilege of the floor, I have been on previous boards where we did have it moved up in the agenda, and what we found, what I found, of course, there are different people running this seat from the seat running meetings, is that not a lot of work got done. You know, the purpose of the town board meeting is primarily the legislative responsibilities for the town. I'm available by email. Every board member is available by email. You can stop in my office, make an appointment to meet with me if there's any concerns on an agenda. We do take you know, all the comments from the public into consideration when we take up issues. At this time, I would like to keep the privilege of the floor where it is located, unless there's an extenuating circumstance where there's a hot button issue where the entire room is filled. And then, you know, I have no problem accommodating in that particular situation. With that, does anybody else have any kind of comments for the board? If not, we can move into supervisor items. Item 12 on the agenda. Side of the municipal complex that Apex Solar was installing our charging station. They buried the conduit. They pulled the wires today. They will continue to work on it, and I believe they said by mid-next week they'll have the charging stand installed. I know I was with them this morning when they were looking at the breaker panel to make sure that they can put the proper breaker in there and it's not going to be a problem. So that's good news. I also received a card from a retiree, our deputy highway superintendent, Mike Montgomery, which I'd like to share with the board and the public. It says, Todd, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you and the town board for your support during my tenure in the highway at the highway department. The proclamation signed by the entire board meant board. Very professional, presented by you and my party. This will be a special memory. I won't forget. It has been an honor to work for a growing, amazing community. My best to you, our town, and our town board. With sincere appreciation, Mike Montgomery. So that's very kind of him to send that to us. We have correspondence to Charter Communications indicating that, which is also known locally as Spectrum, is making its customers aware that on or around July 15, 2019, video on demand, title, and guide channels for movies on demand will no longer be available on the channel lineup serving our community. We always do a lot of good news. I have an email from our part-time rec director. It says Sandy and Davis is from Kathy Allen, who's with the New York State Public High School Athletic Association softball coordinator. It says, Sandy and Dave, I just want to thank both of you for all you've done for our softball organization over the past years. You are great people to work with, and I personally want to thank you for all you have done. Please, the attached thank you letter, I think you please pass the attached thank you letter to the town board and the staff members. All the best to you. Thanks again, Kat. So that good work on your end, Dave. Does not go unnoticed. I have a request from Rick Leonelli, reaching out to the board to see if the board would be interested in getting an insurance review. If you want, I can have him on the agenda for a 5-minute presentation on what he would do for us, or we can schedule that he work with the insurance committee to get to do a review. Totally.
I don't mind hearing what he has to offer.
All right, we'll draw it by the coming. We received a notice from the Department of Labor regarding a former employee left on our own volition, stating that according to their determination, the claim is eligible for benefits under Section 593.1 of the Unemployment Insurance Law because the claimant quit with good cause. The good cause that we're aware of is that she was taking a job closer to home that paid more money. However, she's making a claim in town now. My suggestion would be to provide information to council and let her follow up to oppose on that for town.
Absolutely.
Do you need a resolution for that?
No.
And I have correspondence from State DOT regarding bridge repairs on Buffalo Road for the bridge over I-87. This is Dear Supervisor Kuzner, we are pleased to advise that our contractor is tentatively scheduled to begin work on the above reference project on Wednesday, June 26th. Work to take place under this contract will include concrete repairs, bridge joint and bearing replacements, a deck overlay, approach pavement improvements, and I-87 guardrail improvements. We anticipate that this work will require 3 months to complete. No night work is anticipated for this project. Work will be progressed during daytime hours with alternating one-way traffic over the bridge controlled by a temporary signal system. The signal system will be in operation 24/7. Signed the reverse project charge. That's all I have on the supervisor items. Committee reports. Committee report. Let's see then. They want an executive session.
I don't believe we need one.
Council, do you? Do you have any need for executive
session? I do not.
If not, I'm going to send a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Roll call.
Councilman Van Tassel?
Yes.
Councilman Noonan?
Yes.
Supervisor Kuzner?
Yes.